You'll light that candle.
Hey, this is the first season, fifth edition of Third Party Threat Hunters. We've been gotten a great guest today. First, I'm going to introduce myself again. Greg Rasner, author of Cybersecurity and Third Party Risk, and an upcoming book, actually just going to come out here probably in early summer, Zero Trust and Third Party Risk. So I'm looking forward to that one. My co-host here is Al Molnick. Al, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Al Molnick. I'm a cybersecurity manager for Third Party Risk at a large financial institution.
And I got Rob Wood. So Rob and I, he's the CISO for Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Make sure I get that all out. And Rob and I have been longtime compatriots on LinkedIn and really passionate, found his passion about third-party risk as well in cybersecurity. We've had a lot of lively conversations and emails back and forth, and was gracious enough to come on today and be a co-host, which is great. I think actually guest on the call. And Rob, you want to just give a little background about yourself and tell the viewers?
Yeah, totally. So I mean, my journey with third-party risk started on the receiving end of, like, you know, the beatings that you get from going through the vendor risk management process. I worked at three startups prior to my current role. And, you know, because of that, you're selling into another business and you get subject to the process and the sort of the trials, if you will, of third-party risk management. And so I both built TPRM programs and been subject to them. And now, of course, I'm doing it at a much bigger, different scale, which is interesting in and of its own right. So yeah, this is definitely a passion point of mine, because my background, my former technical background is in red teaming, or, like, you know, this more holistic adversarial analysis you know, I feel like third parties are a great way to kind of sneak in the side door, so to speak, of, you know, of an organization. If you're trying to do something to go, you know, to target somebody or to get after some particular asset or, you know, accomplish some goal. Yeah. So
certainly the APTs have figured that out. The Advanced Persistent Threat Actors have certainly figured that out. There was another one over the weekend, and I think a North Korean actor was doing it to a lot of through a widely used app. They're not targeting South Korean infrastructure anymore. They just go after the apps that the South Koreans use and other teams use in that space. And that's right.
Firms or, you know, the finance firms, or, you know, all that stuff. It's like, you have that sort of trust between providers, and, like, that's really hard to train for.
Just had a great conversation about that this past week in New York, talking about that third, fourth, fifth, nth parties, and using that as a way, think of it in terms of lateral movement. So using nth party to the next party, to the next party, until they find you to do that. It fits in line as well with the guidance around financial institutions. It fits in line really across all of them to do that. Supply chain is definitely an area with a much larger surface area, right? But people are seeing that as well, where they're seeing these attacks that are nth party around you and then coming after you a little bit later do that. It's interesting world.
SolarWinds, Rob, was not really targeted at SolarWinds. It was targeted at three-letter agencies, right? Four-letter agencies and intellectual property that Microsoft and others held, right? That wasn't really the goal. You've been very passionate, I think, in the right way about some of your ways that I'll summarize it of, we're not doing it right. Right, is probably the best way. You're doing it wrong, right? It's the snide way of saying it, but it is appropriate, and it's something that Al and I have noticed and talked about as well. Is we see too many folks doing third party risk as a compliance checklist activity, or not doing it at all, right? You sort of they do it enough to get somebody off their back, or they don't do it at all. I just wanted to kind of tee that up for you, Rob, because I know that you've got some really great thoughts about that.
Yeah. And honestly, I mean, so in my world of consulting, I would almost rather see somebody just not bother, you know, like, if you're going to do it like the old kind of dated way, like, don't bother. Because, you know, you're not like the juice is not necessarily worth the squeeze in terms of risk reduction. If you don't think about it in a way that you're actually like reducing risk. If you're just, you know, pouring all this time and energy and effort into, you know, building this complete inventory and doing the questionnaires and reviewing the questionnaires and, you know, all of that stuff, like how much are you moving the needle? You know, we talk like there's this trend emerging around quantitative risk forecasting and loss expectancy and stuff, which is really exciting. And I have not officially done this myself, but I'd love to, or if somebody, you know, who listens wants to, you know, poke Rich Sireson, the like does something like this.
I'll tag him on the,
there we go. So like how much are we actually moving the needle in terms of risk reduction by doing this stuff? And I'd say not really. And I think my hypothesis is that we like all of that inventory, compliance checking, pen test results checking, all of that stuff is really like, is your supplier secure or is the product you're consuming secure?
Right.
You know, to some reasonable degree. And what we don't really focus on at all, conversation is totally neglected. Like, how are we using the thing? Because you might procure the most secure, safe software in the world and use it wildly insecurely. And that's something you can control as an organization. You can hook it up to your single sign-on. You can train people around it. You can have a CASB or a SASE or a DLP hooked up in front of it. You can, you know, make sure that only managed devices are using it. Stuff like that. And so I think, and if you were to kind of bucket those two areas of risk into 50% chunks, even if they don't fall neatly into those buckets, like you could do the first chunk perfectly, which I'd argue that we're not, because, or at least doing so is extremely expensive, then you're still like, you're only 50% of the way there, which is not a great place to be. And so, you know, I feel like you'd be better served doing the bare minimum in the first part, which is expensive and doesn't scale well. And then focusing most of your effort on the things you can control. And what I feel are like the bigger needle movers, or at least you have this more significant return on investment in terms of you do something and it makes an immediate impact on the risk posture. And I feel like that's where we need to be focused on in this conversation of third-party risk management.
And what's a good example of one of those scenarios?
Yeah. So let's say you've got your marketing team coming in and they want to start using, you know, some new marketing stack. They want to use Segment and they want to use Snowflake and things like that. Okay. You know, the typical way would be I'm going to run both of those companies through our third-party risk management process. We want to put them both in our spreadsheet. We want to reach out to them, ask for their SOC 2 reports, type 2 reports, get their policies, review their policies, get their pen test results, all of that stuff. Now, having worked with both of those companies, in the past and having, you know, reviewed them and just knowing people at those organizations, like they both have fairly mature security programs. So everything is going to look good on paper there. Now, both of those tools are very complicated. You know, they have a lot of integrations that you can hook into it. There are very large organizations using Snowflake, for example, to do everything from like financial data management, healthcare management, like there's very sensitive data that sometimes goes into Snowflake systems. And the fact that you can connect these things to just about anything means that like you might want to be looking at, instead of like so focusing so much on the what it is and is it safe, focus on the marketing team's use case and intended use case for the tools. All right. We want to put this kind of data into it. We intend to hook it up and use it this way. All right. So now let's instead focus on getting those tools hooked into our single sign-on. Maybe we do a threat model of like the integration landscape that is planned. Maybe
sure, we hook it into DLP, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hook it into some kind of like configuration posture scanning solution. So that way you've got this sort of firm foundation when those tools are brought online. And like if it's configured appropriately, the access control is handled appropriately, you know, you've only got managed devices logging into it, and you've threat modeled like the state of tools that are going to be connected into the thing. So that way you might not have like a very sensitive data asset flowing into what might be considered like a lower risk service. That sort of scenario you'd kind of uncover through threat modeling. Like you do these kind of activities, and that's going to uncover way more risk and actually help you get your arms around actionable risk management things, as opposed to just dealing with compliance checking.
I love the threat modeling piece. We don't do enough of that in third party space at all. And
And
if I ever get dumb enough to write another book,
let's do it together. You need
Greg. I told my wife if I ever. After this one, I'm not joking. I told her if I ever see it, I've got an idea for a third book to find a sharp object and stab me until I stop moving with it. It's really dumb.
That's a darn good point, Rob. You should have a second writer on that rather than doing the whole lift and shift yourself, right? That way there can be two broke people at the next conference.
I always volunteer for point in the Marine Corps, which is a dumb idea. Rob, keep going, Rob. Sorry.
Rob, I see that. I hear what you're saying, right? With the making sure that we have the intended purpose not only determined, but also make sure that we have the right tools in place to enforce the correct controls around that. And I think what I'm hearing is the idea is, hey, we wouldn't want to send you PHI to something that was intended for public data or MNPI that was not significant MNPI. And suddenly we're giving you significant amounts of, you know, customer data or something along those lines. So fit for purpose, make sure that the intended purpose is definitely going along, right? Is it, that's roughly what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we do a lot of things as security teams that like we tend to over optimize or like talk too much about like controls, which like controls are good. Security controls are things that manage risk, but when we only talk about the controls, you know, we end up talking about, you know, IA, whatever, AC, whatever, you know, BC, whatever. And instead, I think we need to zoom back and look at these, like these capabilities or these things that we do, like threat modeling, you could bucket into a capability, having centralized single sign-on bucket into a capability. And on the backside, like if you have to do third-party risk management as part of a compliance program, which oftentimes that is a thing with more like larger organizations or bigger organization, like bigger or more mature organizations, then like map the controls to the capabilities that you're going to bring to these, like kind of connect into the solutions. And because you can map, you know, let's say 10, 20, 30 controls to the way that you set up your single sign-on and deploy it to that app. You can map controls back to the, you know, the tenant log monitoring that you might be doing and the way that you might respond if there's squirrely activity. You can map things to like the data protection, like do that exercise on the back end and sort of keep everyone out of the controls conversation, but like focus on the practical capabilities that you can apply to a tool. And I think like that also eases the conversation that we might have with, let's say, the owner of the tool. Like in that marketing scenario I brought up, like if you're having the conversation with SVP of marketing and, you know, they're like, hey, why are you talking to me about threat modeling? Why should I care about doing that thing? You can say like, all right, well, this, instead of talking about specific controls, you talk about, well, threat modeling is a way to sort of map out this ecosystem. The two tools that you want to bring in, Segment and Snowflake, they have a lot of integration capabilities. And I suspect, and if you want to use it effectively, you're going to be connecting the website, the mobile apps.
The value of it is lost in some ways.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah. So like this is going to help you get the most out of this tool, but do it safely. And it gives us awareness around how we can kind of protect this ecosystem. That's a much more relatable conversation than talking about controls. So it like helps you as a leader have a better conversation. And also like, it just simplifies things.
And speaking of conversations, that I think where you were talking about due diligence work you do on a vendor and stuff, when you're, when you're asking a conversation as opposed to a checklist. When you're doing checklists, you're just going to ask, do you have a DLP? You're not going to ask, how do you enable it? How do you manage it? How are you checking to see if you actually
operationalized?
Have
right. How widely deployed, all that jazz.
Yeah. That's why I we talk about this a lot is conversations over checklists. Checklists are a compliance activity. And I'm not saying that compliance activities don't need to happen. We clearly are in a mode of having to do those in some cases, but security is an ongoing activity, isn't a point in time. So asking those point in time questions becomes sort of, you're not getting to the meat of it as you were asking about, yep. Rob, to your point, right? Al, did you want to add?
I like that, Rob. So, you know, as practitioners, a lot of times we tend to get into the jargon, right? We get into the speak. And I do think that we lose some of the, we can't see the forest for the trees sometimes as that comes in there. I agree with you, right? You've got to be able to step back and say, all right, what are we trying to accomplish here? And not just, you know, here's this control, and get down into the weeds right out of the gate to do it. Yep. Those pieces are expected to be there, but we don't have to talk about that in terms of doing that when we're given advisory services back to the business.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things to call out here, and like, this is probably an uncomfortable subject for many people running in big organizations, but like, shadow IT is already a thing. Like, there is almost certainly unauthorized SaaS tools, COTS tools, what have you, in use in your organization. Whether or not you know about it and you track it in any way or you don't is almost besides the point. And so, yeah, I feel like having this, like approaching the problem in a more capabilities-based way also lets you, you know, so if you invest heavily in the identification of SaaS tools, you know, whether like, let's say you deploy Zscaler or, you know, Grip or whatever, you know, one of these tools that kind of gives you a state of play of what's running in your environment, whether it's through like DNS activity or network logs or agents or whatever it is. But you have some sense of like what's running in your environment and how it's being used, then like you could also on the backside without having to like proactively engage or without having to actively engage anyone, just step back and like do the mapping of like, you can almost envision like a spreadsheet heat map sort of thing. That's like, you know, you've got your apps and then each column is one of these capabilities, whether it's, you know, single sign-on, threat modeling, tenant log monitoring, you know, supply chain risk management review, maybe you're getting an SBOM from them, like, you know, whatever the thing is, you know, enumerate all those capabilities and just sort of like do the crosswalk of like which providers or which tools are falling into or aligning to these capabilities and, you know, or which ones have you like onboarded, so to speak, from a, like an authorized inventory standpoint. And it lets you start to engage your total addressable market, which is like your internal organization in a more intelligent way. Say like, hey, yeah, sales team, I noticed that like you guys are using this stack of tools and that's fine. Like you guys are doing, like you're doing your work and that's important. That's important work. You're part of a value mm-hmm. center here. Like, I want to help enable you to do your thing, but like, let's talk about like something that we could do to your stack of tools, in terms of like these capabilities we have as like, you know, IT/cybersecurity to help make you do that, like to help you do that more safely and effectively. And, yeah. And I think like, cause if you're trying to do like some kind of controls mapping across all those things, then you start getting into like complicated CSPM tools and GRC tools and all that. And it just becomes a total nightmare.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, and I think what I was going to also try to address some of that risk too. One thing that I always emphasize is your contracts, whether the vendor has existing a risk relationship, like they have currently have risky data or they don't, the contract should state and the process should also support it in the back end. that when changes in relationship happen, do either you don't have a connection, you're going to get one, or the nature of the data changes. Because we've all seen this, that relationships organically grow over time, and even with the best intentions, suddenly the data has gone from internal only to, you know, private or restricted higher level classifications, and nobody says anything, right? If you put it in legal documentation, yep. Lawyers hopefully will notice it, and they're usually more kind of responsible about getting into hot water legally, so they'll generally raise their hand. And if the account team knows that that's part of the process, hopefully they're also engaged and say, wait a second, I think we probably need to talk to the folks over at TPRM about this, because I think we only have it down right now for public data, and it looks like we're going to go to a different level. Because roughly 60 to 70% of most organizations, the work that TPRM does is renewals or upgrades of existing services with existing contractors. Very few companies take on new vendors on a continual basis. So you'll see that organic growth happen, and that's where the slip-ups happen. They go, who the heck told them they could have class 4 data? Nobody did. They just did it. You know, the marketing team went off because it was the value add that they wanted with that product, right? And nobody went back and said, wait a second, that's part of the inherent risk now. We need to reevaluate what residual risk is actually with that. So these are all great points, Rob. Yeah.
Well, and like, you know, contract terms, I think like you touch on such an important thing there, like the contractual terms that your procurement team may want to see like present in all of these different agreements, roughly speaking. I think that's a really important thing, and I think it's going to get even more important as these supply chain attacks continue to unfold. Like, you know, if you don't have some kind of breach notification or
just go in that direction, exactly,
laws like that,
every contract should have instant notification regardless of whether or not they have restricted data. Just because we've seen too many instances where prior to COVID there are no terms, because nobody just, well, that's never going to happen. What's the worst that could happen, right? And then of course, as we all know, the activities just increase exponentially, and so my current term for the book I'm writing on Zero Trust and Why They Intersect is, you're mathematically inevitable to have a breach now with your third and fourth parties. It's going to happen. Yeah. So you might as well just prepare for it and figure out how you can reduce the breach or reduce the impact. To that same point, Rob, if you don't have incident notification terms, you're gonna get yourself on the wrong end of a discussion.
Yep. Well, and there's your third parties, and then there's your unauthorized third parties. Like, you know, mm-hmm. take a more of a consumer tool, like a tool that fits into both a like B2B and B2C model, like LastPass. You know, organizations that, you know, maybe their user, like, let's say they don't offer a centralized password manager, and you know, their consumers are just using LastPass, but they're using it to store company specific or organization specific passwords.
Right.
Like it or not, that's part of your supply chain risk portfolio. And I mean, that's hard. But yeah, so I 100% agree with you.
How did you follow up on that one?
No. I was nodding my head really loud. You probably picked up some of the marbles.
I heard some rattling.
Rolling around. Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. There were some statistics out there as well, that I ran across recently that were talking about, just a high percentage of companies that have a third party that have had an issue in the last 2 years, right? An event, if you will, to do that. And the statistics were pretty high. It was 50, 60%, somewhere in that neighborhood. I'll have to dig that out. But those concepts are, you're highly likely going to have some sort of an event. And if you can't put these terms and conditions in your contracts up front, that's the start of the relationship. That's the dating phase. And if you can't get it in there, you've already lost it.
That's when you have all the leverage too. After they've signed the contract, you're not going to get anything in except why are you calling me?
Right, and I have renewal or onboarding time, or like your only like your saving grace.
Which is a strong argument for why your renewal terms should be short, as opposed to these perpetual contracts.
The evergreen ones, I call them.
The evergreen contracts. Yeah, those are terrible. Yeah. And then the idea as well, you bring up a good point as well, that every time you add a new service or materially change the service, should be a contract event, right? That should, because at the end of the day, you know, as third party risk, we're here to make your business better and safer, not prevent your business, right? We're here to make it better. And I think your earlier conversation around kind of zooming out a little bit to make sure that everybody is seeing the same things, yeah, great idea. We do tend to get into details too often where people's eyes just kind of glaze over. And rightfully so.
Including ours.
Yeah. I wanted to touch base with you on your own podcast, which I think, and I've seen a lot of your posts too, are not just focused on the technical side of cyber, but you actually call it the soft side of cyber. Was that right?
Yep.
And I'll provide a link on the along with the podcast. But just want to kind of give us an overview and just talk about it a bit. I think it's a great podcast. It's important.
Yeah, totally. So it's a website, podcast, YouTube, you know, content thing. And we're structuring it as a full-on nonprofit. The goal, or our goal, is to try to help people in the cybersecurity field and the cybersecurity discipline, whether you're a CISO, a pen tester, a forensic responder, auditor, you know, trainer, whatever you are, to be more impactful in your role by focusing on and developing the non-technical and the soft skills that you need to be more effective, whether that's communication, self-care, persuasive writing, storytelling. You know, as a CISO, like, I remember that my first head of security role, it was a startup. You know, I'm coming out of like very technical roles. I left Sigil as a principal, doing threat models and static analysis and you know, just really deeply technical stuff. And then I started having to like hire a team, write job descriptions, do budgets, write a strategic plan. I didn't know how to do any of that stuff. I was I'm hitting the Google machine, like YouTube and stuff. And it's like, you know, making it up as I go. And
if you don't know how to do something, I don't know how I used to fix stuff around the house without YouTube or Google before, somehow.
Absolutely. Like, the only reason this crown molding is up over me is because of YouTube. Make no mistake. It would not be there otherwise. And so, but what we're trying to do is help people in these, like, in this discipline, be more effective by like bringing their technical skills and then bolstering their non-technical skills so they can just level up all in all. So,
that's great. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I think that's something that, you know, we get a lot of podcasts about technical abilities or sharpening your technical abilities. And you can be great technically, but if you can't communicate that very well, then you might as well not be. It's hard to show your value. And I know that's an overused term, but if you're not able to explain it in business terms, then you won't be able to explain it at all.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and this is like, you know, bringing it back to the third party risk management conversation. This is like where, you know, if you're talking to somebody about just way too, if you're having that conversation with the marketing people about, you know, just very technical things, their eyes are going to glaze over. They're not going to care. They're going to dismiss you. If you're abrasive, I've worked with a lot of security people who are just jerks. They're hard to work with. They have the rock star mentality.
I tried. Yeah. No, yeah.
And,
yeah, but I know what you mean. You're right. Hey, why don't you understand me? I'm speaking English. No, you're not. You're talking about a technical threat. What you need to do is put it in business language that the marketing folks understand what this impact will be to their business.
Yep.
Or that they'll be embarrassed in front of the CEO. Nobody wants to be embarrassed in front of the CEO for causing a breach because they didn't do the right thing. Right. So that you can explain to them, right? So it's spot on, Rob.
Yeah.
We're coming up on the half hour. I do want to keep to the 30 minutes so the readers, the listeners can all keep to that time schedule. But Rob, really kind of, again, preacher and choir, we've been really back and forth on some of the same issues. And again, I really appreciate your support and that you bring up, because you have a great wide audience on LinkedIn, that you bring up those topics and aren't afraid to kind of push push others to say, no, you're not doing it right, or here's how you can do it better. And the podcast.
I'm just a troublemaker. I'm just a professional troublemaker is really what it is.
you identify risk. That's what you're supposed to be doing as professional.
I like your version better.
Well, I got to figure out how not to get fired when I tell my senior folks that you're doing it wrong. So that's how I figure. I've identified risk. It's what you're identified risk, right? So all right. Rob, again, thanks for the time. Any last thoughts?
I don't be afraid to think about this stuff differently. Like, there's so much dogma and there's so much inertia and momentum and, you know, way we've always done it. Like, you know, the whole, you know, it's always done, you know, nobody likes to hear it's always done this way, except we just keep doing it this way. And so, you know, like, look inward. Don't be afraid to like challenge the status quo. Cause like like so much compliance stuff I found just boils down to just interpretation. Just interpret it differently. You know, get creative.
That's right. Al, any last thoughts before we go?
Yeah, I can't follow that up, but I am looking forward to your podcast. I wholeheartedly agree. This has been a great conversation. So thank you so much, Rob.
I appreciate you guys.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon. Cheers.